This is Afternoons with Paula Kruger on ABC Radio Canberra.
How are you feeling today? It might be different to how you're feeling yesterday. It might be different to how you end up feeling tomorrow. But really, minding your mental health, it will be a key issue in the coming weeks, in the coming months, as you're living with COVID-19 restrictions. So what are the things that you can do now, right now, to prepare for the future and get your thoughts in order? With you right now is Kirsten Peterson. She is the former head of performance psychology at the AIS, and she now operates Kirsten Peterson Counselling, which specialises in getting the best performance from people under pressure. And let's face it, we know a lot of people who are under pressure right now. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us here on Afternoons on ABC Radio Canberra. How are you feeling today, Kirsten?
Thank you for asking, Paul. I am minding my mental health, as I will be talking about, and I think it is a daily journey. And I would say I'm above average right now. So thanks for asking.
That's good to hear. Now, can you tell me, how can people prepare themselves mentally?
Well, these are uncharted waters for many of us, including myself. But I find that in talking with others who are struggling, I think the first thing is to consider a balanced approach to what we're kind of in right now. We acknowledge the ever-shifting uncertainties, and that's so we normalize that. So we don't want to be in a place where we think, okay, I've got it today, and this is how it's going to be, because clearly that's not our reality right now. So being realistic, but also then, I think it's about stepping out of denial and trying to pretend it's not happening. I think, and I'll address this a little bit more, that for our own mental health and safety, we do need to acknowledge from accepted sources that will tell us what the medically safe situation is. We do want to step out of denial and acknowledge that. But at the same time, so there's two things here, recognize that nothing lasts forever. No pandemic has ever lasted for all time in the past, and we are, by current medical modeling, looking at 6 months, which I know sounds crazy right now, but we need to know there will be an end. So this is about sort of how do we perform in perhaps a different way during this time, recognizing that there will be a time when we will be able to be differently.
So that's how we prepare ourselves mentally. Now, how do we train our brain so it's going to perform at its best during that time? You know, now that we've stepped out of denial, we know that nothing lasts forever. What are we doing to our brain during that period?
And I often talk about the brain and our mind. So they're both related, but not quite the same. But nevertheless, if we see our mind and our brain really working in tandem as a sort of a network approach.
So firstly, can you just give me a rough idea of what's the difference between my brain and my mind?
Well, the brain is the physical organ that sits right in your skull. And we understand it to have certain operating properties, such as, so where I talk about the brain with folks is to understand that what we think about most often becomes a habit that our brain will continue to reinforce. So if we are perpetual worriers, our brain will continue to help us do that because we start to develop those neural pathways that become superhighways. Now, the mind is more of a, it's part of our consciousness, and we're still not completely sure about how that all works, but it's clear that there's no little guy in our brain pulling levers for our mind. But our mind is our thinking and emotional center.
So when we're training ourselves to cope with what's ahead, we're dealing with our brain.
Both our brains and our minds, because we have habits of operation. So we won't. So what I'll go for, though, is this idea that we want to work with both of them. But we often unintentionally, because we don't have an instruction manual for any of this, we unintentionally reinforce habits that actually work against the way our brains and minds work. So, for example, our minds are thought generators. They just pump out, they say, tens of thousands of thoughts a day. And we unintentionally and inadvertently will glom on to some of them and let some others slide by. And so in training our minds, I am looking to help people become more aware of how their minds are working and to be conscious in choosing the thoughts they want to sort of go with and the thoughts that might be less useful and let go. And so what happens is the thoughts we pay more attention to, then the brain wires the superhighways in, and that's how they sort of interact with each other. Does that make sense?
Yes. So on a practical level, what will I be doing to my brain, or what would I be doing right now to help myself through this process?
Yeah. So a big part of it is unreactive self-awareness, starting to get curious about what are my hot buttons? What are the perpetual worries? And most of us are aware, you know, I'm a worrier, or I tend to get angry, or I think these thoughts more often. So it's really leaning in with just curiosity to that, and then considering, is what I'm thinking right now helpful in this situation? Keeping in mind that our brains just I'm using these terms interchangeably. Our mind is just churning this out, and there's part of our mind we're the only ones that can think about our thinking. No other species in the world can do this. It's a blessing and a curse. So we have that ability to step back and go, is my rumination about the worst case scenario coming up in 3 months helpful right now? And so we want to start to be able to identify what's helping us feel better, what's enhancing our mental health and what's not. And then rather than it's no use to try not to think a thought. I mean, it's just, if I told you not to think about a pink elephant right now, what pops up?
Pink elephant.
That's exactly right. But it's simply having a conversation, and I know this is going to sound cheesy, but it's literally thanking your brain for the thought, thanking your mind for the thought. Let's say thank the mind for the thought and gently lay it down. Okay, yep, I'm a worrier, but I'm going to move on to having a conversation with the person I love right in front of me, or I'm going to enjoy this book that's right in front of me. So I'm not denying the worry's right to exist, because that's where we fight our mind. And our mind and brain always win. So we're looking to gently it's kind of like using thinking to hack thinking, if that makes sense, so that where I'm moving gently over into this space without reactivity to the things that I find are going to be more useful. Perhaps it's what I'm doing right now. Maybe loving the person who's right in front of me who I was about to yell at because I was getting worried and I was going to take it out on them.
So with techniques like that, is that something that can help us through something like isolation? Because a lot of people are physically isolated at the moment. We're trying to stay connected socially, but physically isolated at the moment. What are some of the things, and I guess what kind of impact is that isolation having?
Really great questions. And when we look at the times when people have been isolated in the past, you know, we don't choose it typically. When we're in a mentally healthy place, we don't choose to do it. And so you see that with the mental health detriment effects for people who are forced into isolation, and now we're choosing to do it. So it's a curious time for us. We are wired for community. So it will be important to be aware of the possible impacts. And when I say that, then I'm putting my straight up psychologist hat on to say that emotional reactions are fine. All emotions are normal. But if any emotion, say it's sadness or anxiety, stays with you for more than 2 weeks, that's not a transient event. And that's what emotions are meant to be. And that's when any individual would want to seek some help from a trained professional. So it's that idea that when emotions stick around, that's where we want to watch out for.
Okay, so two week limit on that.
Well, and, you know, according to the diagnostic manual for depression, for example, that's when we would start to think, not just sad, maybe depression that we would want to have some support for.
Okay. You're on Afternoons on ABC Radio Canberra. We're getting some advice on how to cope with change and just the mental health challenges that you may find ahead of you. With you right now is Kirsten Peterson. She's the former head of performance psychology at AIS and now runs Kirsten Peterson Counselling. So, Kirsten, this concept of, you have this concept of, you know, you've worked with sporting groups before. You have this thing called Team of Humanity. What exactly is it?
Well, if we were to examine ourselves at the DNA level, we have far more in common with everybody else in the world than difference. And I think we have, as societies, started to forget about this, and we will tend to draw away from it even more when we are looking to protect our own little tribes or ourselves, you know, and we see examples of this in terms of, I'm sure people do not mean to behave badly in grocery stores when they perceive a shortage, but nevertheless, we're seeing people sort of step away from this idea. So when I think about how I talk to my daughter, for example, who's at university in the U.S., and she has to find a way to keep she and her cohort safe and socially isolated, and people aren't taking that all seriously, I've asked her to use a team approach, that we're on the same team here. We all have a role to play, and we may think our own ways about the importance of social distancing or keeping ourselves safe or being kind to each other, but we have to behave as part of the team, then, or we step out. But I think in the sense of team of humanity, we're all here. And gosh, unlike the fires that happened to, you know, just Australia, where the world was watching in horror about what we experienced, this is truly a global experience. And I hope there are such lessons about how we take care of each other virtually, whether it's our family, and we find that the greatest mental health benefits, and this goes for athletes as well, in terms of how they react in high-pressure sporting situations, but turn on our compassion buttons, be compassionate to ourselves, compassionate to others, consider, even when socially isolated, who can I reach out to share whatever it is I want to share with them, pick them up. Don't wait to be picked up. Pick somebody else up. And thank God for social media, and thank God for our cell phones right now, that we are able to do that in a way that 200 years ago when the last major pandemic happened, nobody was able to do that.
I like the sounds of this. You're making compassion sound like it's a strength.
Oh, I could go on. It is actually sort of where I think we are heading, even with elite sport and even to the extent that we are most resilient when we are self-compassionate, when we are compassionate with others. I think it is the superpower, the secret sauce to what is going to right the world from, you know, our isolation and tribalism to actually bringing out our best in ourselves and each other.
And just in the, you know, thinking back to what people might be going through, Kirsten, in the coming weeks, in the coming months, there's going to be highs, there are going to be lows. Do you have any advice on riding that wave, hopefully surfing on a steady Malibu through our waves of highs and lows?
That's a great analogy. I do talk to athletes a lot about this, and because elite athletes will talk about that they don't ride the lows and they don't ride the highs. And athletes, and I think people in general, kind of get this idea that, I hope, that no low lasts forever. And so athletes who might have a day or two of bad training quickly come to realize that it's, you know, if we look, no bad training ever lasted forever. And so this one isn't going to last forever either, but it will be prolonged. Your low will be prolonged if you kind of get your mind stuck in it. And so it's important to have that sense of perspective that this too shall pass. I stay a steady course and I'm patient. But what is less intuitive, I think, for athletes and people is this idea that we also don't ride our highs so high. And for athletes, I offer up the example of, you know, the person who's trained for years and they go to the Olympics with the goal of winning the gold medal and they win it. Woohoo! You know, and I'm not saying don't celebrate the highs, but what's going to happen the day after or a week after this big event? Inevitably, we're going to come back down. But nobody wants to come back down. So we want to prepare for that. Now, in this context, what I see the propensity to happen is we might make little things like, oh, I can't wait for, some anticipated event. You know, maybe it's virtually, but it's going to really make me feel great. And, oh, if it doesn't sort of meet all my expectations, I'm so disappointed. And that kind of exacerbates the time down. So I'm not saying don't enjoy, but don't get so hung up on things having to be perfect or the thing that's going to make me feel so much better. It may, hopefully it will, but it may not, and we want to be ready for that. So riding the highs and the lows as gently as possible.
Well, there's so much more that I want to ask you, Kirsten. I think we're in for the long, it's a marathon, not a sprint, really, that
Absolutely.
We're facing, to use more sporting analogies. We really appreciate your time and insights this afternoon, Kirsten. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're very welcome. I look forward to doing this more because I think it's so important if the opportunity arises.